Welcome to the Poetry Pod, Season 1, Britain Through the Bards. We shall use poetry to examine this royal throne of kings, this sceptered isle, this earth of majesty.
Orlando,
this...
what are you doing?
I'm introducing the show.
Yeah, but like that?
I mean, what do you mean like that?
It's a bit old.
Old? It's dramatic.
You know Shakespeare. Dramatic. I mean, there's been other poetry since
what
then.
What better than Shakespeare to introduce Britain? I mean...
It's just, I don't know. I mean, how about we try something different?
I'm all ears. What exactly is that?
Just give it a chance.
Giving it a chance. It's sort of 80s, but bad 80s.
Oh, come on.
I thought you wanted to do something modern.
Right, okay, listen to this. Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pod. My name is Izzy.
And I'm Orlando.
And we're two people who like poetry.
Love poetry.
Right. Who love poetry, and we want to share that love.
With you.
In our first season, we'll be looking at British culture through the lens of poetry. Welcome to the Poetry Pod. Season 1, Britain Through the Bards.
Well, I guess that wasn't bad.
Right.
But not much better than mine.
Oh, come on.
With our first episode coming straight from... Yes, you've guessed it. The pub.
That most venerable, quintessential and unique of British institutions.
Pints, pubs and poetry.
Come, let us drink, let us drink.
Pints, pubs and poetry, although not particularly in that order. Although I must say, Izzy, I'm feeling pretty parched. Shall I get the first round in?
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, why not? So, I think I'll have a pint of...
We didn't sign any of the, you know, contracts, so we can't name any specific brands.
Oh, dear. Yeah, we should have thought of that about that in advance, shouldn't we?
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to have a generic ale.
A generic ale,
yeah.
Sounds delicious. And I think I'll have a non-specific lager.
Mm.
Actually, though, you know, I'd quite like something stronger.
Yeah, like what?
Rum. Captain Stratton's Fancy by John Masefield. Oh, some are fond of red wine.
And some are fond of white.
And some are all for dancing by the pale moonlight. But rum alone's the tipple and the heart's delight of the old bold mate of Henry Morgan.
Oh, some are fond of Spanish wine.
And some are fond of French.
And some will swallow tay and stuff fit only for a wench. But I'm for right Jamaica till I roll beneath the bench, says the old bold mate of Henry Morgan.
Oh, some are for the lily.
And some are for the rose.
But I am for the sugar cane that in Jamaica grows, for it's that that makes the bonny drink to warm my copper nose, says the old bold mate of Henry Morgan.
Oh, some are fond of fiddles.
And a song well sung.
And some are all for music, for to lilt upon the tongue. But mouths were made for tankards and for sucking at the bung, says the old bold mate of Henry Morgan.
Oh, some are fond of dancing.
And some are fond of dice.
And some are all for red lips and pretty lasses' eyes. But a right Jamaica puncheon is a finer prize to the old bold mate of Henry Morgan.
Oh, some that's good and godly ones, they hold that it's a sin to troll the jolly bowl around and let the dollar spin.
But I'm for toleration and for drinking at an inn, says the old bold mate of Henry Morgan. Oh, some are sad and wretched folk that go in silken suits.
There's a mort of wicked rose that live in good repute.
So I'm for drinking honestly and dying in my boots.
Like an old bold mate of Henry Morgan.
So that was John Masefield, Izzy. Do you know anything about John Masefield?
I do not.
Well, let me enlighten you.
Oh.
Well, only a little bit.
Right.
John Masefield was a poet laureate. So he was, in fact, very interesting. He was the second longest serving poet laureate. Ooh. In British history.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. He was poet laureate for 37 years, and he was second in terms of length to one other person. Who was?
I have no idea.
Quiz question number one.
Oh, God.
Perhaps our audience know. Well, I'll tell you. Alfred Lord Tennyson.
Ah.
He was there for much longer. Yeah, and Masefield, his parents died fairly early, and he went to live with his aunt, and he read a lot, which is not surprising, given the fact that he turned out to be a poet. And his aunt didn't think that was very healthy, so she sent him away onto ships. So he did a lot of sailing, but unfortunately it backfired, because he ended up reading even more on the ships. And in fact, I think he thanked his seafaring life later on for having introduced him to a lot of literature. So unfortunately, his aunt may have been instrumental in actually helping him become the poet that he became.
Well, she must have been so disappointed when he was, you know, declared poet laureate. She must have been like, oh, God.
Totally, totally. So, yeah, who are we?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Why are we here? We should probably
talk about that,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Who are you?
Hi, I'm Izzy. And so, Orlando, we met in the summer, and we realized we both really miss Britain, because you grew up there. I just spend a lot of time there. I grew up in Germany.
Yeah.
And we both just miss the place, because obviously this year we haven't been able to go there.
We haven't been able to go there, and Britain is slowly drifting away from the continental plate of Europe anyway.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that later. I think that's too depressing now to talk about. Yeah. And we decided we could both speak English, which is a good start, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Both love poetry.
Both love poetry, yeah. And I think we both obviously miss being able to speak this poetry and all of the wonderful poems that have come out of the English language over the millennia. Mm. So we're very, very happy to be able to delve back into that treasure trove again. And what are we going to be doing? We're going to be looking at various different aspects of British culture, aren't we?
Yeah. We've got 6 episodes planned. We'll be looking at, as you said, different aspects of British culture, the things we miss most, really.
Absolutely.
But we'll talk about that later on as well.
We'll talk about that later, exactly. And one of the things we definitely miss most, which is why we're starting with it, is the pub.
Oh, yeah.
And we wouldn't want you to get the impression that we think that that's the most important facet of British culture, although it is pretty quintessential.
Yeah.
It's the cornerstone, if you like. I've got a few famous quotes for you, Izzy.
Ooh.
And I want you to guess. They're all pub-related.
Right.
I want you to guess which famous literary figure said these particular things.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm only going to ask you 3. Let's see how well you do.
Oh, God.
A good local pub has much in common with a church, except that a pub is warmer and there's more conversation. So who said that?
Hmm. It sounds a bit Oscar Wilde-ish, but it's not quite witty enough. I feel like Oscar Wilde would have been able to do it with fewer words.
Yeah, so?
No idea.
No idea.
No idea.
You're not even going to hazard a guess.
Oh, God.
Okay, I'll tell you. I'll put you out of your misery. It was William Blake.
Huh.
William Blake, the author of The Tiger. Do you know The Tiger?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tiger, Burning Bright?
Yeah.
Yeah, so William Blake, there you go. So he was obviously fond of a little pint himself.
Yeah. Well, not surprised.
Right, who's this? I'm going to help you now, because I can see you need it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do an accent. All right, I'm going to do one of my famous impressions so you can get this. I have taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me.
That's a trick.
You've got to be able to get that. Come on.
Can you come again?
Shall I do it one more time?
Yeah, please do.
I have taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me.
I mean, I still have no idea, but it's a great accent.
You like the impression? Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm shocked that you don't know it.
Oh.
I hope our listeners recognize it. Sir Winston Churchill.
Huh. I mean, it did sound like a bulldog.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's also, regarding Winston Churchill, quite an apt comment.
True.
So there's a degree of self-reflection, I would say. And last but not least, now you've got to get this one.
Oh.
I'll give you a clue. This is somebody quintessentially English. And in terms of literature, you cannot avoid him. Mm. Okay? And if you don't get this, I will be very disappointed. God. No pressure.
No, no.
I would give all of my fame for a pot of ale and safety. Who said that?
I mean, you said fame. They said fame, whatever that might be.
So they were famous in their own lifetimes.
Yeah. I mean, quintessentially English. So I'm thinking it could be Robbie Williams, but I feel like he wouldn't give up his fame for safety.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So was it instead of Robbie Williams, was it Billy Shakespeare?
Billy Shakespeare. It's a natural, logical leap, isn't it, from Robbie Williams to William Shakespeare. Absolutely. You're quite right.
Hooray.
So you've got one point out of three.
I mean, it's fine.
Well, I look forward. You're something of a pub quiz expert, so I'm looking for... You're going to give me a pub quiz later on.
I will.
I'm looking forward to that. Let's see if I can beat your one out of three. 33%. Success rate. Okay. Good. Yeah, what do we miss about pubs? What do you miss about pubs?
The atmosphere, really. The kind of, you know... So in Germany, what you do, you go to a Kneipe, which is the, you know, the German pub. But then you sit down at a table, someone comes, gets your order, and you just stay in the same place for the entire night.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, in a pub, you get up, you get a drink, you chat to people...
You're almost forced to be social, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really miss that. And in a good pub, there are usually a group of regulars sitting at the bar having a natter about something, and you can't avoid them. You have to sort of push your way past them.
Yeah.
And you are somehow involved in the conversation.
Exactly, yeah.
I really miss that as well.
Yeah.
Although I must say, I kind of bemoaned the development of the pub because there are too many TVs in pubs. I'm a bit of an old fart regarding... pubs. I prefer them to have no televisions, actually no music unless it's live, and a roaring log fire, even in the summer.
Right. You know who would agree with you there? George Orwell.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah, he wrote an essay called The Moon and the Water, where he describes his favourite pub in the world.
Okay.
And one of the things he mentions is that there shouldn't be any music. Didn't say anything about TVs, but I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be a fan of TVs in pubs.
I can almost certainly think that there would have been no TVs when he was writing that.
Yep.
Lucky man.
Yeah.
And what else does he say? What's his sort of ideal pub?
So there shouldn't be any games, apart from in one room you can have, like, games going on.
Okay.
There should be a beer garden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's very specific about his the drinking vessels.
Okay.
He wants to have, I think, porcelain cups.
Porcelain
drink.
Cups.
Yeah, he's a bit. That's,
okay, that's,
I mean,
going a bit far. I think that's going
a bit far.
I mean, I agree about all of the, you know, no music business, but I'm quite happy to drink out of glass. Yeah, very good. So, I think we can find another poet, actually, other than
Richard, or
literary figure other than Orwell, who is also a fan of pubs. This is a poem written by the poet William Shenstone, 1714 to 1763, and the title of the poem is Written at an Inn at Henley. To thee, fair freedom, I retire, from flattery, cards, and dice, and din, nor art thou found in mansions higher than the low cot or humble inn. 'Tis here with boundless power I reign, and every health which I begin converts dull port to bright champagne. Such freedom crowns it at an inn. I fly from pomp, I fly from plate, I fly from falsehood's specious grin. Freedom I love, and form I hate, and choose my lodgings at an inn. Here, waiter, take my sordid ore, which lackeys else might hope to win. It buys what courts have not in store. It buys me freedom at an inn. Whoe'er has travelled life's dull round, where'er his stages may have been, may sigh to think he still has found the warmest welcome at an inn. Yeah, so that was William Shenstone. William Shenstone's a bit of a sort of shadowy figure in the literary or British literary life. Do you know anything about him? I know he came from Worcestershire.
Right. I read that he was an avid gardener. He had a big garden that he was very proud of, and he forced people to watch and admire it.
Okay, so he spent more time gardening than writing?
Probably, yeah.
Did he not have a big house as well? I think he might have done.
Would go well with this large garden,
Would kind of make sense. I think the house called Liso's, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it correctly. And, he was well known. I suppose his best known works were his elegies and pastoral ballad in four parts. And he did have a very, very famous fan.
Ooh, who was that?
Interestingly enough, because we're doing this from Germany, was Schopenhauer.
Oh.
Was a big fan of Schenstein. So that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Another thing I read was that he has a pub named after him. So I'm pretty sure he would be very pleased to hear that.
I bet he would, yeah. I'd be very happy with a pub named after me. Although I'm not sure that Schenk would sound very good. The Schenstein sounds a bit more like a pub.
Schenk in Germany, you've got a Schenker, which means,
true.
A place where
that's
you get
true.
Beer.
A Weinschenk.
Yeah.
A good point, actually. No, there should be one named after me. Very good. Right, I'm feeling thirsty again.
Yeah.
What can I get you?
I think, gin and tonic?
Gin and tonic, yeah. To hell with all this generic stuff. I'm going to get something, a gin and tonic. That's also that's generic anyway.
Exactly, it's not brand marked. So,
exactly. Yeah. See you in a minute.
Yep. Right, while Orlando's gone, I'm going to sneak in a cheeky poem by an American writer. Don't tell him, because obviously it's written, but anyway, I don't care. Her name is Amy Lowell, and she was born in Boston, Massachusetts at the end of the 19th century. And she was born into a pretty wealthy and educated family, so there was a lot of reading and, you know, studying going on in her family. But then she wasn't allowed to go to college because, well, you know, early 20th century woman. But she made up for it by reading anything she could get her hands on. And then she was collecting lots of books. And then she traveled to Europe to see the poetry scene there. Pretty cool. And she met Ezra Pound and was pretty impressed by his style of poetry. So when she went back to the States, she started writing poetry herself. And she also promoted other writers. So she was very influential in publishing a collection of American Imagist work, which Ezra Pound criticized. He was like, oh, that's a sellout. But then I guess if Ezra Pound criticizes you, you haven't done too badly in life. But she also wrote poetry herself. She wrote a lot of love poetry for her lover, who was an actress called Ada Dwyer Russell. There's some great stuff in there. But obviously we're talking about pubs and drinks, so I'll do a poem called Vintage by Amy Lowell. I will mix me a drink of stars, large stars with polychrome needles, small stars jetting maroon and crimson, cool, quiet green stars. I will tear them out of the sky and squeeze them over an old silver cup. And I will pour the cold scorn of my beloved into it, so that my drink shall be bubbled with ice. It will lap and scratch as I swallow it down, and I shall feel it as a serpent of fire coiling and twisting in my belly. His snortings will rise to my head, and I shall be hot and laugh, forgetting that I have ever known a woman.
Here you go, Izzy.
Yep.
One G&T.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that hits the spot. Very, very nice. So have we got any good anecdotes? Can you remember any good things about pubs and experiences you've had in pubs?
Plenty. And I guess plenty that
probably
I can't
too
remember.
Many, I would imagine, in your case.
Yeah. You said you used to work at a pub.
I worked, I think, in three different pubs as a student and, my last few years at school. Holiday jobs in pubs, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. I did lots of very interesting things. But I think my most famous exploit was actually breaking open a new beer barrel. And the beer barrel exploding all over me and all over the row of customers at the bar. So I think I did pretty well. They got a lot of free alcohol as a result.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to look back on. It was not amusing
not
at the time.
Not funny at the time.
Not at all. No. But I heard that you you do a lot in Edinburgh, don't you, at the Edinburgh Fringe?
And, yeah.
And you, didn't you tell me something about a haunted pub or a place where you used to rehearse or something?
Yeah, no, it's one of the venues there is the Banshee Labyrinth, which, as the name suggests, is haunted, Banshee Labyrinth. Yeah. They've got several ghosts in there, apparently.
Okay.
But I've only met one.
Well, okay, that's probably enough, though, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And I feel the best one. I shouldn't say that, because when I go back, then the other ones might be upset.
Okay, yeah, you don't want to tempt fate.
Yeah. No, exactly. But yeah, her name is Molly, and she lives in one of the... They turn all the rooms that they have into little theatres.
Okay.
And she lives in one of those, the one that I performed in. And so the story goes that there were always kind of stories about, you know, a little ghost or a little girl haunting that room.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was kind of, you heard footsteps and I think someone saw her once. But it was all very sort of, you know, stories. But then they were doing works on the pub and they found an old sort of chimney going up. So they opened it up and the little girl's shoe fell out of it.
Oh,
like,
that's eerie.
Yeah, she's
great. I mean, did you have any sort of any strange vibrations while you were rehearsing?
I mean, yeah. During performances, she likes to walk around. Like, you sometimes hear footsteps, but there's no room above that. But you still hear footsteps, and then sometimes the electronics go a bit haywire. So,
mind you, that happens everywhere.
That's true.
Happens here.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting. I must go there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's it called again?
The Banshee Labyrinth.
The Banshee
Labyrinth.
Great
place. Yeah. It's a great place.
Sounds very, very interesting.
It's a good place to go if you're interested in poetry, because that's where all the poets hang out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a really cool thing. I mean, it's something that's happening more and more, I think, in pubs, is that there are live things going on again. There's music, live dance. And also live poetry readings as well, which I think is fantastic. It's what it's all about, really.
Yeah.
And we have, I think, as our next poem, something which is about just that, which is about a poet forcing his friends to listen to his poetry while they're trying to have a good time
and sink
a few beers in the pub. So this poem is by the poet A.E. Houseman of Shropshire Lad fame. And the name of the poem is Terence, This Is Stupid Stuff. Terence, this is stupid stuff. You eat your victuals fast enough. There can't be much amiss, 'tis clear, to see the rate you drink your beer. But, oh, good Lord, the verse you make, it gives a chap the bellyache. The cow, the old cow, she is dead. It sleeps well, the horned head. Oh, we poor lads, 'tis our turn now to hear such tunes as killed the cow. Pretty friendship 'tis to rhyme your friends to death before their time, moping melancholy mad. Come, pipe a tune to dance to, lad.
Why, if 'tis dancing you would be, there's brisker pipes than poetry. Say, for what were hop yards meant, or why was Burton built on Trent? Oh, many a peer of England brews livelier liquor than the Muse, and malt does more than Milton can to justify God's way to man. Ale, man, ale's the stuff to drink for fellows whom it hurts to think. Look into the pewter pot to see the world as the world's not. And faith, 'tis pleasant till 'tis past, the mischievous, 'twill not last. Oh, I have been to Ludlow Fair, and left my necktie God knows where, and carried halfway home or near pints and quarts of Ludlow beer. Then the world seemed none so bad, and I myself a sterling lad, and down in lovely muck I flain, happy, till I woke again. Then I saw the morning sky, hey-ho, the tale was all a lie. The world, it was the old world yet, my things were wet, and nothing now remained to do but begin the game anew. Therefore, since the world is still much good, but much less good than ill, and while the sun and moon and yule luck's a chance, but trouble's sure, I'd face it as a wise man would, and train for ill and not for good. 'Tis true, the stuff I bring for sale is not so brisk a brew as ale, out of a stem that scored the hand I wrung it in a weary land. But take it. If the smack is sour, the better for the embittered hour. It should do good to heart and head when your soul is in my soul's stead. And I will friend you, if I may, in the dark and cloudy day. There was a king reigned in the east. There, when kings will sit to feast, they get their fill before they think with poisoned meat and poisoned drink. He gathered all the springs to birth from the many venomed earth. First a little, thence to more, he sampled all her killing store. And easy, smiling, seasoned sound, sate the king when health went round. They put arsenic in his meat, and stared aghast to watch him eat. They poured strychnine in his cup, and shook to see him drink it up. They shook, they stared as white's their shirt. Them it was, their poison hurt. I tell the tale that I heard told. Mithridates, he died old.
So Terence's friends have got a pretty simple message for Terence, which is basically play some music, put some music on the jukebox and stop writing poetry because it's really, really sad and melancholy. Terence has a pretty long answer to that. What exactly is he saying?
I mean, he says, you know, well, obviously drinking is all good to forget your troubles, but it doesn't really help. Mm-hmm. So the next day you're going to wake up, my things were wet. There's so many great lines in this poem. It's fantastic. And then what poetry does, it prepares you for worse times, right? So if you're feeling sad and you've read some poetry, it sort of strengthened you.
Okay. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
He brings up the simile at the end with, you know, Mithridates, the old king, who used to eat, you know, or drink little bits of poison, so that when his enemies tried to poison him, he'd be immune.
I suppose I'm sort of split in two halves here. I sort of understand what Terence is saying, but I kind of also sympathise with his friends.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's nothing wrong with a bit of music, and there's nothing wrong with beer in heaven.
Exactly,
there,
yeah. Really? And then when you're at the pub, you don't really want to listen to Terence's poetry all night long,
no.
Right? That's fine if he brings one or two poems. You can be like, oh, that's nice.
At the beginning, perhaps, so you don't get too depressed.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
Exactly. Wouldn't be good for business anyway, would it?
No, true.
Now, we've got quite a lot of interesting series, episodes and guests,
yeah,
haven't we?
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Let's look just a little ahead into the panoply of interesting experiences we have coming up. We've got our next episode is about travelling, British obsession with travelling. Mm. I think the Germans travel perhaps in modern times even more than the Brits, but the Brits travel quite a lot as well. We have a very interesting guest.
Yeah, we've got Rowan McCabe coming on. He's a door-to-door poet.
So not a salesman, but a poet.
Yeah. He does the same as a travelling salesman would, but with poetry and without money.
That's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Does he live from that?
Good question. I guess we'll find out.
Does he stay in hotels or, I mean, where does he sleep?
Does he sleep?
Good question. We must ask him when he comes on.
Yes.
And the third episode is about something that's quintessentially British, without which there would be no Britain.
That's true. It is the sea.
Yeah. That most defining British element,
yeah,
if you like, other than the pub, of course.
True.
Yeah. And there we have Matt Panesh.
Yes.
And what does Matt do? Where does he come from?
So he's also a poet, obviously. And he lives on the northwest coast and Morecambe.
Well, Morecambe, yeah. Morecambe Bay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
nice
there's,
part of the world.
Yeah, you know, and he moved there a couple of years ago and he got there and he was like, there's not much going on here in terms of culture, even though it's, you know, it's a seaside town. There used to be lots of things going on, but
yeah,
now it's sort of all come to a standstill.
Okay.
So he said, you know.
So has he injected culture into this?
He has injected culture, yeah.
Forlorn and barren part of Britain. I'm sorry, it's a terrible insult. I'm sure it isn't forlorn and barren.
Not anymore.
Matt's there.
Matt's there now.
Very good. And then the following episode is sort of to borrow steal a phrase from William Wordsworth, who this year became 250 years old, by the way. I wandered lonely as a cloud. So to do with poetry and the British landscape, gardens, moorland, forest, enclosed fields, wonderful country lanes with high hedges.
And of course, the weather.
The weather, yep. Exactly. How could we leave that out?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got at least one guest lined up, John Schölgen. John Schölgen, who is an author and a playwright, German, but has written at least two volumes of British poetry, which will be very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think perhaps one.
Yeah, I think we'll have Heidi Liedtke coming on as well, who's a scholar who wrote about idling in Victorian times. So I think she'll have some fun anecdotes about, you know, British people.
Brilliant.
That getting lost in the landscape. Possibly.
Anything to do with idling sounds very good to me. And then our second to last episode is War and Empire.
British Empire.
The British Empire. For those days when Britain once ruled the world.
Mm.
I say once.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's obviously not really any longer the case. No. Those were the days, though, weren't they?
I mean, not really. No.
Were they not the days?
No, I'm pretty sure people would disagree.
Yeah, probably would.
I would.
Too,
I mean, and all that's left now is football, really, right? And even that, I mean.
We'd better leave that subject, I think. Yeah. And yes, speaking of things in decline, either the British Empire or football brings us swiftly onto our last episode, Brexit and Beyond. Let's hope that there is a beyond after Brexit. In a post-Brexit, post-Trump, post-corona digitalized 5G nightmare where Big Brother Boris is watching you, where is Britain going? I'm sorry, I scripted that. I couldn't resist it.
Yeah, I'm loving all the alliterations, obviously.
I thought you'd like that. So there we are. Those are our six episodes that are coming up. A few of the juicy guests that will be joining us, who will also be contributing with their own literature, not just anecdotes, and their own poems.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
I'm pretty sure they all love a good pub as well. And I've got some proof for that, at least for one of our guests, for Matt Panache, because he's written a poem about pubs. So,
I'm all ears. Let's hear it.
The Culture by Matt Panache. You can tell them by their names. The Philosopher's Arms, the Jolly Misanthrope, the Rabid Dog, the Bricky's Balls, the Monkey's Bum, the Educated Yob. The establishments of the town, where old men go to tell tall tales, talk old turt and drink Newcastle Brown. They are five fine hand-drawn ales, each with its own frothy golden tale to tell. The pub is the hub, the centre of the wheel. The grub is pretty good, but best of all's the spiel. The chat, the gossip, the view. There's the gin-soaked optimist, it'll end in tears. The whiskey priest, if you buy me one, I'll forgive you. The vodka, more content, grrr, and the beery economist. I'll have 2 pints off your cheapest, please. These old men talk and tale and gape and strut, giving life to the old line. The people who should run the world go home when the pub shuts.
That's a really nice poem. I automatically now look forward to meeting Matt, and I'm sure he has injected culture into the northwest of England. But of course, there was already culture there.
Yeah. I'm just going to nip to the loo real quick.
Okay.
I'm going to let you go on with the poetry stuff.
Okay. Have fun in the loo. Now I'm going to, while Izzy's gone, I'm going to bring you to a slightly more southerly part of the UK. So we're no longer in the northwest in Morecambe, but we are now venturing south to the area where I grew up, which is Devon, which I miss very much. And this poem is by the poet Robert Southey, who lived from 1774 to 1843. And Robert Southey was a contemporary of William Wordsworth, and he was also a lake poet along with Wordsworth and Samuel Taylor Coleridge. So he obviously, having come all the way down to Devon, we are springing straight back up again to the Lake District. But interestingly enough, Southey was also a scholar of Portuguese and Spanish literature and wrote in 1819 A History of Brazil. So that's actually very, very interesting. But anyway, Izzy's at the loo, so while she's doing that, I'd like to bring you all to this wonderful place called Porlock. Porlock, thy verdant vale so fair to sight, thy lofty hills which fern and furze imbrown, the waters that roll musically down thy woody glens. The traveller with delight recalls to memory, and the channel grey circling its surges in thy level bay. Porlock, I shall forget thee not, here by the unwelcome summer rain confined, but often shall hereafter call to mind how here, a patient prisoner, 'twas my lot to wear the lonely, lingering close of day, making my sonnet by the alehouse fire, whilst idleness and solitude inspire dull rhymes to pass the duller hours away. Izzy, hi,
yeah,
you're back.
I was just
reading a poem by Robert Southey, which, yeah, he was talking about Porlock, which is a very pretty place on the south coast of Devon. And did you know that the word zombie comes from Robert Southey?
How did that happen?
Yeah, because he was quite the scholar, and in his History of Brazil, he wrote about the Haitian word zombie with an I on the end and no E, and I think he added the E. So, I mean, he didn't invent it. And the other interesting thing, his great legacy, I suppose, literary legacy, is Goldilocks, the story of the three bears. That is from Robert Southey. I didn't know that either. Fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know that story, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
So how was the loo?
Good, you know, average loo. I always feel like, I don't know, loos in pubs are always a bit more sort of like homey. They feel a lot more like, you know, it's kind of...
Yeah?
Yeah. It depends, but, you know.
Really? Are you sure that you went to the loo and not into somebody's house? Were there people around you didn't recognize? Looking relaxed?
Yeah.
I think we'd probably better move on and leave the pub as fast as possible.
Right.
Okay.
Before we do that,
yes,
though, I promised you a pub quiz.
You did, and I am avidly waiting for it.
Hooray. Okay.
Okay.
You
do
ready?
Do your worst.
Okay. Right. So, first question. What's the ratio of pubs to churches in the UK?
The ratio of pubs to churches. I know that there are a lot of churches in the UK. In fact, I know that this is a bit of trivia that you're not asking for. In Norwich, I think, has the greatest congregation of churches, no pun intended, in any British city in the UK. Now, let me think. I would say it must be something funny. So it must be 1-to-1.
It is, yeah, pretty much. Although, because pubs have been closing in the UK, sadly. So now churches are slightly overtaking pubs. So there's like 39,000 pubs to 40,000 churches.
Really? Okay, so people are becoming more religious and less alcoholic.
But
that will change when Corona's finished, when COVID has died down a little bit. Again, no pun intended. Hopefully pubs will reopen.
Yeah.
And then I think
that
ratio will change. Are you going to give me a point for that?
Very good. Get a point for that.
Very generous of you.
Right. Second question. What's the most common pub name in the UK?
That is a very good question. I would go for the Red Lion.
Oh, yes. Another point for you. Yeah, Red Lion is the most common one.
It's closely
followed by the Crown.
The Crown.
The Royal Oak.
Okay. So
second and third.
Well, everything to do with royalty, basically. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Like Netflix series, but never mind.
Yeah, they're all named after the series. Right, question number four. Oh, that's a tricky one.
Okay.
What's the ABV of the strongest beer ever sold?
What is an ABV?
That's the alcohol content.
The alcohol content?
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you know that and not me? That's very strange.
Because I looked it up.
You looked it up, yeah, okay. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. What's the ABV of the strongest beer ever sold?
In Britain or
in the
world?
In the world. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Right, okay, let's think logically about this. Now, wine is normally around 14% or something like that, I think. And Belgian beers are usually pretty strong, those Trappist beers. So I'm sort of thinking they're normally, a sort of really strong one is about 11%. So I'm going to go with
something that's probably even stronger than wine. So I'm going to go with 15%.
Nope.
Go on.
It's far away. 67.5%.
What? 67%? So yeah. That's vodka.
Yeah.
It's not beer.
Really beer, but no. It's brewed the same
and
way.
And what's the name of the beer?
It's the Venom? Something Venom.
God. Something Venom.
Something Venom. Because okay. We can't have names on the...
Well, I think Venom is... Oh, a good point, yeah. No, I have something to cover that up. Venom, but I think Venom is an appropriate name for it. And where? Yes. Which country did it come from? Do you know?
I think that's the UK.
The UK?
Oh, it might be
my
the
word.
US.
But okay.
Yeah, I did not research.
Good heavens. Okay.
But it's, yeah.
I got one wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, next question. The Angel Coaching Inn, the Manor Tavern, and the Swiss Tavern all are or used to be pubs in London. But what else do these three have in common?
Angel Coaching Tavern, the Manor Tavern, and what was the
last
one? The Swiss Tavern.
Yeah. All pubs in London. What's special
about
them?
Were they coach stops? So were they for the Royal Mail coaches? Did they stop there en route to going somewhere? It's not a very interesting answer, but it's actually a really boring answer. It can't be right. It's not right, is it?
It's not right, no.
Go on then. Put me out of my misery.
They all have tube stations named after them.
Oh, of course they do.
You've got Angel, you've got Swiss Cottage.
Yeah.
And Manor... Is it just Manor?
I think there's one called Manor House, isn't there?
Manor House.
Manor House. Probably. I know, Angel Islington. That's right. I think that's on the Northern Line. Ah, yes. Happy memories of the Northern Line.
Right. Final question.
Go on.
Going back to Pints, Pubs and Poetry, pop literature.
Yeah.
In 1943, a British author and his wife were having a pint at the Duke of York in Fitzrovia, London, when a group of violent youngsters attacked the pub. This event inspired the author to write which famous dystopian novel?
Ah, yes. Now let me think. I think I know the answer to this. Was it Anthony Burgess? Clockwork Orange.
Hooray!
Yeah. Very good. So how many did I get right?
3 out of 5.
3 out of 5?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess you win this one.
Okay. Well, we'll keep this on as a standing thing in our show. Mm-hmm. And every week we can ask each other difficult questions.
Hooray.
But I'm glad I won the first round.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Last orders have just gone. So I think we should get a quick couple in. What do you think?
Yeah. Pints or poetry?
Both.
Good.
Both. Right. Why don't you get the drinks in and I'll read a poem. I'm going to read a poem by Emily Dickinson. Emily Dickinson lived from 1830 to 1888. And she wrote a poem called I Taste a Liquor Never Brewed. I taste a liquor never brewed from tankards scooped in pearl. Not all the Frankfurt berries yield such an alcohol. Inebriate of air am I, and debauchee of dew, reeling through endless summer days from inns of molten blue, when landlords turn the drunken bee out of the foxglove's door, when butterflies renounce their drams, I shall but drink the more, till seraphs swing their snowy hats and saints to windows run, to see the little tippler leaning against the sun. So, Izzy, cheers.
Cheers.
Down in one. Because we've got to get going, because everything's shutting up.
Yeah, let's go.
The pub is locking down, no pun intended. What are you going to read for us?
I've got a poem, very, I think, fitting for the end of the night. The Absinthe Drinker by Arthur Simmons?
Simmons, probably, or Simons, who knows. Maybe Simmons. Someone can correct us
That's
on that.
There's a Y in the name.
Yeah.
The Absinthe Drinker. Gently I wave the visible world away. Far off I hear a roar, afar yet near. Far off and strange a voice is in my ear. And is the voice my own? The words I say fall strangely like a dream across the day. And the dim sunshine is a dream. How clear, new as the world to lovers' eyes, appear the men and women passing on their way. The world's very fair. The hours are all linked in a dance of mere forgetfulness. I am at peace with God and man. Oh, glide, sands of the hourglass that I count not, fall serenely. Scarce I feel your soft caress, rocked on this dreamy and indifferent tide.
Beautiful. So it summarizes exactly how I feel leaving the pub now.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving the pub. It's fantastic. We'll look forward to seeing our listeners in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, excited.
2 weeks' time, when we shall be talking all about traveling and meeting our very, very interesting guest, Rowan McCabe. So as the music gently glides us out of the pub and perhaps into the lockdown nightmare that you're all facing, hopefully our poetry pod has given you a little something to think about and some nice inspiration for your more reflective days spent inside. And the question remains, Izzy, what are we going to do now? Are we going for a kebab or an Indian? What do you think?
Indian?
Okay, let's do that.
That's good.
Good idea. See you in 2 weeks.
See you.